Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
It's August. Parliament is in recess, so MPs are away in their constituencies, knocking on doors, schmoozing locals. An election isn't that far around the corner, remember. With that in mind, though, some will probably be asking themselves, is this the life for me? Do I really want to keep doing this?
Why are you leaving?
I think the real question is, why have I stayed so long?
Why are you leaving us?
Well, that's a good question, Matt.
Well, I've loved my time in politics and I've enjoyed, well, not every moment of it, but most of it.
So it'll be 32 years at Westminster. I think that's a good shift.
I think I've got a chance to do something else in life.
74 MPs have said they're not going to stand at the next election. Most of them Conservatives, but not all.
If you're wanting to change things, then go for it. But I'm not going to pretend that it's all going to be sunshine and roses. It is a horrible place to be.
I wanted to be a Member of Parliament when I was a teenager, and I only came into Parliament in 2015. But I felt it was right that I signalled my intent that I would be standing down at the next election.
Some might be thinking, better to jump before I'm pushed, what with the state of the opinion polls at the moment. But others have a good chance of keeping their seats, and yet are still quitting, even in their 30s. So what's going on? We'll hear from two MPs in their own words about why they considered packing it in, why one's staying and the other's going. You're listening to Stories of Our Times from The Times and The Sunday Times. Manveen is on a recess of her own. I'm Luke Jones. Today, why so many MPs are calling it quits before the election.
I'm Charlotte Ivers, and I'm a staff writer for the Sunday Times.
So, the next general election could be 17 months away, at the very most. It has to happen by January 2025. Yeah. Lots of MPs, especially Conservatives, have been announcing that they're not going to stand this time round. Matt Chorley, off of Times Radio fame, has been doing some exit interviews with some of them.
As you leave us, what will you do next?
I don't know. I'm taking a leap of faith.
What are you going to do next?
I just hope I've got enough life left.
What will you do next?
I'm going to retire, Matt.
House of Lords?
Definitely not.
What are you going to do next?
I don't know.
You've been talking to some soon-to-be ex-MPs as well. Is it normal, this far out from an election, for this many people to be jumping ship?
It isn't, strictly speaking, normal. We're seeing the biggest departure of MPs from a governing party since the expenses scandal, which, of course, was a fairly unique set of circumstances. And so something is going on here. And the cynics among us, I'm probably one of them, will say, well, one of the things that's going on is a lot of Conservative MPs are thinking, I would quite like to jump ship before I'm pushed. And in some cases, that is sort of what we see happening. But it's a lot more complicated than that.
And let's talk about two MPs in particular who you've been talking to in depth about this. both have been toying with this idea of leaving. Tell us about the first one, William Bragg.
William Bragg, I think, is a fascinating case, and he's indicative of something, which is that a lot of these MPs who are leaving are reasonably young. So you've seen Dahila Davidson, for example, in her late 20s, meant to be the poster child for the Red Wall MPs. She's off. Murray Black, fairly famous for being the baby of the house from the SNP. She's had enough as well. And then you come to Will Ragg. He's conservative. He's 35. He was elected at 27. He'd done a couple of years as a teacher, a couple of years working for another MP, and was elected at this astonishingly young age. He's done it for 8 years. He's climbed through the backbench ranks. He's the chair of the Public Administration Committee, so a pretty senior figure, but he has decided that he is stepping down at the next election. And he talked to me a bit about why that was.
Can I have a Earl Grey tea, please?
And can I grab a black coffee, please? Thank you.
And a glass of water, if you have one as
well. Oh, yes,
thank you.
He, last year, had a very unfortunate period of mental bad health. He essentially had a bit of a breakdown, to put it fairly crudely, and he took a couple of months off work as a result of that.
You happy to tell me a bit about sort of why you came to take that time out, maybe a bit as well about...
I think I was knackered. I was mentally and to an extent physically knackered, but it only dawned on me after getting to the recess. I think I'd sort of survived on adrenaline and the fumes of adrenaline, and then suddenly that gone, and then it was just a real plummet in mood, which I've likened it previously to sort of falling through a floor. Not that I've done this, by the way, but imagine if you did fall through a floor, and just as you're lying flat on your back below, you think, oh well, that's just how bad it gets. Then the floorboards around you start to creak and you're going to go down another level, and you have to, it really is pretty grim.
And he was very keen to stress to me that it wasn't the fact that he'd had this episode of mental ill health that made him want to go. It's more that he, over the course of that couple of months, essentially had time to reflect and had time to think, is this what I want to do with the rest of my life?
It's not all about getting the small violins out, but I think that gave me some space to think. And on reflection, having got here when I was 27, now 35, presumably 36 at the next election, I thought, well, that's 9 years or so. So that's a reasonable stint. I'm still, I think, in a place in life where I can do things that are interesting, worthwhile, and different. And I think it was therefore an element of being quite tired and wanting to have a change.
And he broadly came to the conclusion that he could do more good elsewhere.
But I think there was an element of fuel in the tank, not necessarily being there. Enthusiasm for the role, yes. Enthusiasm for the role, enjoyment of aspects of the role, certainly. But not a complete enjoyment of it. And on balance, a decision that it was better to do it on my terms. Of course, you're always at risk of being thrown out by the electorate. It would be naive to think otherwise. But making the decision was the asserting of control.
One of the other MPs I want to talk about is Charlotte Nicholls. She's a Labour MP.
She is, and Charlotte Nicholls is a fascinating character. And actually, it was really great to be able to speak to her, because she was in a position we don't hear much about, on the record at least, and that was that she had considered stepping down. And the conclusion she came to was that she was going to stay.
I think that it's very different for people who were like... You know those MPs who have like always wanted to be an MP, and it's like the sum total of like their life ambition? I think that they're much more willing to kind of like look past some of the downsides of the job, but particularly people like me who are sort of accidental MPs, or people that could quite easily go and do something else. Some of the stuff that comes with the job, some of the stuff that comes with the job, I think it's quite rational to kind of look at it and be like, do you know what, this is actually worth it.
She's interesting as well, another very young one. She's 32, elected at a very young age in 2019. And Charlotte has faced astonishing things since becoming a member of Parliament.
Then there's like, you know, the stuff to do with like your house and like, you know, your general security and all that sort of thing. Like, you know, I'm single and live alone, so I haven't had anyone turn up at my house that I know of, and certainly not recently. But I have had, like, you know, a guy that turned up at my office with a knife after some, like, you know, insane things that he'd read online. And, you know, I mean, he was mentally unwell. But, you know, it doesn't make it easier to deal with those sorts of things. It's not just you. It's, like, everyone around you. Like, my ex-boyfriend's parents literally left social media because they couldn't cope with seeing the volume of abuse that I got and that he was getting and that they started to get, you know, like...
when you were together?
When we were together. And, like, you know, my family get abuse from strangers on the internet because of my job. And it's, you know...
And she's also been fairly vocal as well about some of the atmosphere that she sees in Parliament, of it being a boys' club and it being rather misogynistic in cases.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's worse for women, not only in terms of, like, the level of abuse you get, but, you know, just things that men don't get, like, you know, gossip about, like, you know, your personal life and things in a way that men don't seem to get, you know, people commenting on, like, what you're wearing or your makeup. And it's, like, the level of scrutiny that you're under feels manifestly higher than what the men get. But then, of course, there's the men in Westminster, many of whom think that they're, you know, not only God's gift to politics, but God's gift to women as well.
So why she decided to actually stay and continue?
She had decided that she still does want to make a change, and that on top of that as well, she said to me, well, look, if the good people like me leave, then it's only the bad ones left, presumably. If you only have people for whom the system is working, you're not going to change the system. So you've got two different cases there, really, of people trying to work out whether it's worth it.
And so she says she wants to stay. William Ragg is saying all of this means he's going to leave. It's part of his reasoning that, he's the MP for Hazel Groves, that's Greater Manchester, majority 4,400. A cynic, as you'd say, would suggest that he's jumping before he's pushed.
To be honest, I sat and talked to Will for quite a long time, and that really isn't something that came across in the conversations that I had with him. I really do get the sense that he essentially feels like he's had a pretty good run in Parliament and maybe hit the maximum of everything that he's able to do there and wants to do something else. It's actually a fairly broad trend that you see across the employment market now. People of our parents' age would have gone into an accountancy firm at 21, been promoted until 65, and then retired as a partner on a lovely pension. Well, you don't really see people doing that anymore. 8 years, actually, when I look at that, I almost think that's a really long time to stay in a job. And yeah. I think he's more of our generation as well. So there's probably an element of that there.
But even if it's not the case with him, as you see it, when you look at who's announced that they're going to leave, the 72 MPs who've declared they're not going to stand again, 44 of them, majority are Tory MPs. Do you think they are looking at the national polls, which at the moment have Labour around 20 points ahead?
I think in some cases that is the case. I would probably say it's less a case of jumping before they're pushed. What it is that many of them are perhaps looking at the prospect of opposition and it doesn't look wildly appealing. So I think of someone like George Eustace, for example, former cabinet minister. He's going at the next election. And I put that to him. I essentially said, look, are you running away because you don't want to sit through opposition? And he essentially said, look, I've done some really big jobs. I feel like I did my time working for the likes of William Hague, the likes of David Cameron to get us out of opposition. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily something I want to do again. Hmm. Another interesting point he made was that as a former minister, you're on the back benches, and in previous years, you probably would have, if you wanted a new challenge, found an outside consulting job or done another job along the way. The public, and he says, probably rightfully so, don't stand for that anymore. So he said, I think the phrase he used was, it focuses the mind somewhat. He said to me that actually you have to choose now. And his choice was, I've done this and now I want to do something different.
And thinking about what could be perceived as the drudgery of opposition, that's something that Charlotte Nicholls explained as well.
I think the phrase was being in opposition is shit.
being in opposition is shit.
Yeah.
You know, you are traipsing around the voting lobbies, you know, sometimes 16 or 18 times in one evening, knowing full well that you're losing every single vote. So I think for people who think that their party isn't going to be in government at the next election, like, I can totally see why you'd say, do you know what?
Yeah.
It's really demoralising being in opposition, and it's very difficult to motivate yourself sometimes to, like, go in and speak on a, you know, debate that, you know you're going to lose. Yeah.
You're essentially acting in this stage play, and the government will do what they are going to do regardless.
Someone else who is also still very young, but again is also deciding to leave, although, correct me if I'm wrong, not because of concerns that they haven't been able to fully live their best 20s life so far, is Mari Black. She's only 28 and she's deputy leader of the SNP in Westminster. What's her beef with the place?
Well, Mari Black, again, has never been a huge fan of Westminster. Of course, she is an SNP politician. She said in her resignation statement, "I've always maintained how outdated, sexist and toxic a place Westminster is." But she talks an awful lot in that statement about the toll that this job has taken on her. She says, "Since 2015, the lives of my loved ones have been turned upside down and inside out between media attention, social media abuse, threats, constant travel and the murder of two MPs. My loved ones have been in a constant state of anxiety.
I've made the decision not to stand in the next general election. I'm tired, is a big part of it. And the thing that makes me tired is Westminster. I think it is one of the most unhealthy workplaces that you could ever be in. I'm embarking on married life. My parents are getting older. And, you know, I see it in their faces when they come round to visit. I feel like I've done my shift for now."
It does just increasingly seem like MPs are having to make these big trade-offs. And a lot of that, I think, does come down to the easy accessibility of members of parliament on the internet. Mm. That easy accessibility has made it easy for everyone to contact MPs, even those who aren't abusive. So they are getting a massively increased workload in terms of constituents writing in, because if you're annoyed about something, you can just fire off an email, whereas as previously, you'd have to go down to the post office, you'd have to get a stamp. And the demands we're making on them are much higher. And some people may be listening to this and thinking, well, you know what, they're paid 80 grand a year, they should work for their living. And yes, that is true, but this isn't the main bit, really, of what we want MPs to do. What we want MPs to do is make laws, to scrutinise legislation properly, to do the actual governing of the country, rather than just be very highly paid social workers. So I think that balance is starting to get to some MPs, and they sort of think that they came in to do one job and they've ended up overwhelmed by another.
Constituency roundabouts and drains in your constituency are very important, they really are, but we are also here to make the law and to hold the executive to account, and our time here shouldn't just be about a projection of being some sort of superhero solving everybody's problems all of the time at the drop of the hat, because it's frankly impossible.
And you sort of feel the pressure to be doing that, almost the kind of social worker element of it.
I don't mind that, but I find sometimes the most rewarding and fulfilling and precious aspect of it is being taken into people's confidence for them to tell you things about themselves, about their situations, about problems they have. I think what exhausts me more is the expectation that we will continually project that do-gooder, been seen to do everything at the opening of an envelope. Every bit of good news is a direct consequence of our existence and of the representative.
Coming up, they've got used to making 86 grand a year and being the centre of power. So what does the future hold for soon-to-be ex-MPs? That's just in a moment.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's body care breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.
So, Charlotte, it's one thing for many of these MPs to say, I don't want to be an MP anymore because it's not what I want to do. It's a lot more difficult to then find a job after that. They're accustomed to earning upwards of 80k.
No, but how about money? Yeah, do you think it was 86,000?
I have no complaints about the money.
No, but yeah. If I didn't want to do it, if I wanted to do something else, yeah. This is the thing, you have a choice. No one has forced me to become a Member of Parliament. Yeah. I've wanted to do
it. And that's the salary associated with it, yeah.
I'm indeed making the assumption any of us would be able to earn more.
They can't all be George Osborne and have all these fabulously well-paid jobs. Most of them are not household names. What's in store for them?
It's a bit of a tricky one and actually a good case for jumping before you're pushed, because if, say, I don't know, 80 to 100 MPs are pushed at the next election, they'll all be flooding the job market with largely similar skill profiles. And so actually, if you're starting your job hunt now, your skills do look a little bit rarer. And a lot of these MPs just don't have the sort of corporate skills that you'd expect people from the outside of politics to have if you were going to give them a highly paid job. So some of them do come a cropper.
Do you think that some of them might have delusions of grandeur when looking at the job market outside of Parliament, thinking, yeah, I was basically in charge of a small part of the United Kingdom for a while. I deserve this fabulous job, when actually, as you say, their skills profile might match the same as lots of other MPs who are also on the scrap heap and might not be that useful to lots of firms?
I think that is a problem. And some politicians will be in a stronger position. They will have developed interests and connections over the course of their time in Parliament. Don't get me wrong, I think actually one of the biggest powers MPs have is the ability to pull in people from any industry and get a meeting with them. So they do have this incredible access to job opportunities and connections that no one else would. All of that being said, if you haven't developed a particular profile, you're essentially coming into whatever industry you go to next completely fresh. You're competing against people who spent the last 8 years actually working their way through that industry.
That is a way of coming unstuck, though, if you're already fishing in the job market as a sitting Member of Parliament. Earlier this year, The Times exposed Scott Benton MP, Conservative MP for Blackpool South, 36-year-old. Undercover reports at The Times caught him offering to lobby ministers on behalf of the gambling industry. He had the Tory whip suspended as a result. His seat now looks vulnerable at the next election anyway. Thinking about that case more broadly, is there a risk that so many MPs looking for new careers that may be thinking more about themselves and what they're going to do next than actually the constituents that they're currently elected to represent?
Certainly plausible. Nadine Dorries, for example, is currently facing criticism, including from her own party leader, Rishi Sunak, for saying that she was going to step down and then not actually triggering a by-election. And there have been lots of reports of constituents of hers who are unhappy, who essentially say that she isn't turning up to do the job. We know she's busy writing a memoir of the fall of Boris Johnson, so she's got a lot else on. So it is always a possibility. I suppose it's the same with anyone in their notice period. You've probably got to keep a bit of an eye on them.
You don't quite have full steam ahead when you're doing it, yeah. thinking about the sort of people who are leaving Parliament and the current state of the national opinion polls as well, is it clear with all these departures what kind of a Conservative Party we might be left with if the election goes badly for them?
My instinct a couple of years ago would have been, as the Conservative Party shifts towards a more sort of red wall, blue collar conservatism, you're starting to perhaps see a more socially conservative Conservative Party, a higher spending Conservative Party. Well, if you wiped out all of those red wall MPs, suddenly you're left with the Tory heartlands. You're left with Surrey, you're left with Kent, you're left with traditional Cameroon shiny suited Conservatives. And so we would go back to something like that. Well, what if it's different now? What if the Conservative Party is so successfully converted to a red wall party that actually they start losing seats to the Lib Dems in the South East, then suddenly you lose all your shiny Cameroons and the party looks very different. I don't know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, and as we say, we've got about 17 months to find out. That's the Conservative side of the ledger then. What about on the Labour side of things? What about the possible new intake? Again, assuming the general election follows the route that the national opinion polls currently have it as being. Labour's preparing for a lot of new MPs entering Parliament, and Keir Starmer, the leader of the opposition's office, has been pretty ruthless about who they are.
He really has. And I think this is one of the great undertold stories, really, of what the country will look like over the next 5 years, if we presume the opinion polls stay where they are. Keir Starmer, quietly under the radar, has been doing an incredibly good job at making sure that his preferred candidates are selected in winnable Labour seats. So he really could change the ideological face of his party if this plan comes to fruition. And I think that's indicative of the last few years. When you speak to people near to Starmer, they point out that you really do need your parliamentary party on side if you're going to have any chance of governing. Tell that to Jeremy Corbyn, tell that to Theresa May. It is something you need to get done. And so, yes, he has been quite effective by all accounts on making this work. But also, there are those who say that ideological diversity within the Labour Party is important. If you're just filling the voting lobbies with a bunch of clones of yourselves, then you're not really going to have a broad array of ideas, a broad array of options.
We know that trust in politicians generally is low, just lower than journalists, I think. A YouGov survey in November found that 66% of the public believe that politicians are only out for themselves, and that was up from 57% in May 2021. Looking at the systems on both the Labour and Conservative side of things, if we just focus on them, does this put the best people in Parliament?
So the way that you go through the system of becoming a parliamentary candidate is you apply like any other job, you fill in your forms, you go to a selection day. Again, it's like any other job application process. And then you get put on an approved list. And once you're on the approved list, you get to go out to local associations if you're selected for the short list by the central party and you make your pitch for them. It can lead to problems, to be honest. The idea that the central party have of who would be a good MP is often very different to who a local party will have. And there can be attempts to fix it that backfire. We always hear about, for example, a central party putting one person who's their preferred candidate and three terrible candidates forward to a local party, and the local party knows exactly what they're doing and says, well, screw you then, we'll have the terrible one. And it's a very odd selection process for a job. Yeah. On top of that as well, it's immensely time consuming. Both parties will have anyone on their candidates list out delivering leaflets weekend after weekend. You are essentially disadvantaged if you fail to show up. If you've got an all-consuming job, if you've got a big family, that's going to be very tricky for you. And as well, if you have to give up your job to actually be in an election campaign, it's not a paid job. So again, you're probably limiting the type of person who can actually apply for this.
Listening to all of this, I'm getting the view that you wouldn't want to be an MP.
Yes, I think that's probably entirely true, particularly after speaking to so many of them about why they don't want to.
That's clear. But could you see why anyone would want to be an MP? I mean, if a friend came up to you and said, I'm really thinking about doing this, Charlotte, and these are the reasons I want to do it, would you tie them down and scream no at them?
It has actually happened. And it was sort of put to me in a very self-effacing way, this person said to me, I know you're going to be very angry with me, but I have something to tell you. And I thought, oh God, what have you done? You've done something terrible. You cheated on your partner or something. But no, it turned out the terrible thing was that this person wanted to be a member of parliament. And I'll tell you what I said to him, yeah. Which was, no, I'm not angry with you. I'm not upset. When I've talked about how awful a job this is, I mean, for me, this is something that you want. This is something I think you'd be good at. And I think if people genuinely do have a sense of public service, being an MP is one way to do it. I don't think it's the only way. I think that there are many other jobs that can improve the country. Columns in the Sunday Times, nursing, exactly, all the ones like that. And if your skill set is best applied as an MP, then when you want to change the country, good for you. You are going to have to go through an awful lot of nonsense to get there, and an awful lot of nonsense once you're actually in place, though.
You've been listening to Stories of Our Times, a podcast brought to you thanks to subscribers of The Times and The Sunday Times, with me, Luke Jones, and my guest, Sunday Times staff writer and columnist, Charlotte Ivers. You can find all of Charlotte's work at thetimes.co.uk or in print on a Sunday. The producer was James Shield, the executive producer is Kate Ford, and sound design was by David Crackles. If you have a story you think we should be covering, maybe you have an idea for a future episode, maybe you've got something nice you'd like to say about today's programme, you can email us anytime, storiesofourtimes@thetimes.co.uk. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.